This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, I'm going to talk about an interesting thing, dignity. Dignity. I've noticed recently that there seems to be two kinds of people, two types of people, those who have dignity and those who don't. Now, what is it that separates us from our own dignity? It's important. You know, you imagine that if you're humiliated, you lose your dignity, but people can't take it away unless you give it away. You abdicate your dignity at times by doing behaviors that are just not worthy of your own self-esteem. That's the word, that's the description, self-esteem, the quality of being worthy of your own esteem or honor. We call that dignity. Are we just talking about dignity, or are we talking about pride? Or is it just old self-respect? I'm not sure, but without this stuff, life is relatively miserable. So it seems to take a much deeper look. Because there are stockbrokers I know, real estate salesmen, insurance salesmen, psychologists, physicians, who have, they got a lot of pride because they got there by exploiting people and they made a lot of money and they bought the right cars and the homes and their kids go to the best schools. They have this sense of pride, but not a sense of dignity. Because anybody can justify anything. And if your value system puts accumulation of wealth and power as the criteria for self-respect, then you can have pride and self-respect, but you don't have dignity. So I think we have to think about this before mounting ourselves on a soapbox and preaching. How can you have self-respect if you cheat? Now, there's an issue right there in life. How can you have self-respect if you cheat? Now, you see, that word cheat sounds like such a pejorative word. Every time I hear of a couple who said, you know, I had this man and this man cheated on his wife, he's automatically wrong. He's automatically bad if she cheats on him. If you cheat on your taxes, cheating, what does that mean? What does that very word mean? Why do we even use that word? Because if you can justify your cheating, then you still maintain your sense of self-respect. So justifying cheating or finding some corners or finding loopholes, if you could justify it, it makes you maintain your dignity, so on and so forth. No. Some of you, the very wealthy, make use of tax shelters and tax-free income to wind up paying less taxes than the average wage earner. You justify it. You beat the system. Others, on the other side, have figured out angles, ways of cheating the different powers, the ways of exploiting the Social Security system or unemployment insurance. What's it like to be on unemployment now for 9 months, knowing that every time they call you and ask you if you look for a job, you say, oh, yes, I did, but I couldn't find what I wanted. Collecting unemployment, what does that feel like? What is it? Do you have it'd be wonderful to have a free vacation, to have a summer. It must be great to have that time off. But how do you feel inside? Do you feel a sense of pride? Do you say I'm unemployed? Or do you say if you were proud, you would say, no, I'm on unemployment. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. But I'm concerned about people's perception of themselves. And when I think a person loses dignity, then I think they don't respect the dignity of other people. See, if you see children who are being abused, you know you don't have a dignified parent. You don't have a parent who feels proud about themselves. Even somehow, you know, every cent you pilfer winds up eventually coming out of someone else's pocket. So if you cheat the telephone company, you know, it winds up costing somebody else. Every time you cheat an insurance thing or every time you go to a physician. Like I look at physicians, I sometimes get bills from my insurance company about insurance charges that have been put through by physicians that I have seen that have nothing to do with what was done with me. They were just extra charges. Now, I know I have to balk at this. I have to say something about this because I know that if they do that, then they got to raise the insurance rates. I know, even though it doesn't seem to cost me anything, I must say something about people who in some way will cheat either Social Security, Medicare, insurance companies, or any of that, because I'm protecting myself. This has nothing to do with dignity. This has to do with self-protection. But once a person exploits a system, and they feel like they're living by exploiting a system, they have no dignity. I knew a man. It was a man from New Jersey who used to come in, and he came in to see me, and he was a man who was very unsuccessful in his life. He was very unsuccessful. Everything he tried didn't turn out right. Did I ever tell you that joke? No, I have the joke. Maybe. Here it comes. Julian is in the studio. This is a story about a man who had misfortune in his life because everything went wrong for him no matter what he did. No matter from the day he was born, the hospital that he was born in was immediately hit by an avalanche. He was separated from his parents. His parents couldn't find him. He was lost. He was adopted. The adoption home that got him, right, was hit by a cyclone, and it was ripped away. And it was ripped away, so he was kind of thrown out, and somebody picked him up, and he was grown up on a farm. But even in the farm, there was an earthquake, and so the farm got dissolved. So the guy just felt terrible about everything. He knew he had bad luck, right? And so it was, no matter where he went, there was a landslide came after him. He said, I'm not safe on Earth. I'm going to go to sea. So he goes and he gets a job on a tramp steamer. This is a steamer, and he's going in the South Pacific. And what do you think would imagine happens to him? He gets hit by an iceberg in the South Pacific. Everybody is saved except him. And he's floating in the water. And he's in the water on a piece of timber. And the timber is being eaten by termites. Right? So the timber is dissolving, and there he is floating. And off in the distance, he could feel underneath him there's a little whirlpool sucking him down under the water. And off in the distance, he sees sharks coming in his direction. And now this guy is like, this is it. And he looks up to heaven and he says, okay, this is it. Sharks are coming closer. Whirlpool is pulling me down. My termites are eating my log that I'm on. Why me, God? Why me? Why does everything misfortunate, unfortunate happen to me? And the sharks are getting closer now, and they're coming. He could even see their fins, and the whirlpool sucking him under for the second time, and he has barely a toothpick left to hang on to. And he says, just tell me, why me? Why me? Why do I never have any luck in my entire life? Why me? And the sharks are getting right over his head, and he can see their teeth, and they're about to clomp down on him, and they're about to get him, and he's just being pulled down, and then the sky opens up, and a cloud parts, and a little basket comes out of a cloud with a little ribbon. And on this ribbon are the words, because something about you just pisses me off. This is Armand Milworthy with A Positive Mind. So this man had misfortune his whole life. Everything was unfortunate. He just nothing worked. He claimed. What I found out from him was that he was somebody who cheated the system every chance he could get. And the biggest cheat he had, he beat the tolls. He did not have to pay the tolls. He skipped out on tolls. So every time he came to a place where there was a toll, he had a way of going through without paying the tolls. When he came into therapy and he came in to talk to me, I said to him, look, you got to somehow get this straight. It's like people, you know, who have a lot of parking tickets. So I asked him to pay the tolls. Instead of cheating the tolls, pay the tolls, which he did. From the minute he started paying the tolls, his mood lifted. He felt like he was part of the human race. He felt like he was respectable. He didn't go along the drive afraid of being seen. He was no longer cowering, you know. So I think sometimes we feel bad about ourselves from the way we cheat. We lose our own self-respect. It's not whether or not you're conscious, aware, to know what you're doing, to really know. It's hard to be aware of yourself. It's hard to live taking in the consequences of your every action. So what do we do instead? We justify. We try to justify our behaviors. Make up excuses in our mind so that we don't have to deal with the real issues. So that's what I want to talk to you about today, the process of making up excuses for ourselves and for other people. It's the seed of what we in psychiatry call denial, a defense mechanism of the human psyche in which we blind ourselves to our own truth. Denial. The problem with justification is that it becomes automatic. We do it without even realizing it. We just automatically justify and deny. And after a while, we just go blind. We do it to protect ourselves. We protect ourselves from facing reality. Now, I've got great compassion for people who use denial. And I have great compassion for people who are caught in a lifelong trap of justifying all the things that are wrong in their life and they're afraid or reluctant to deal with. You hear them all the time. You speak to your friends and they make up excuses for everything. Yes, I'm overweight, but I can't afford good food. Yes, I'm... And just excuses after excuses after excuses as to why their behaviors work against themselves. It starts in early childhood when the reality of our home life is far more painful than the fantasy we create. I, as a psychotherapist, have seen countless people who've been crippled emotionally by oppressive parents. They eventually got to me because the denial of the damage has led to more and more emotional cover-ups. So you start off with your childhood being painful. And it is painful. You've had a terribly painful childhood. And but you account for it. You say what they did the best they can, and you make excuses. Now, there's nothing wrong with understanding your parents and why your parents did things that didn't feel so good to you. You could make excuses for them. However, it is also important to allow the child inside you to understand that it wasn't right, that they were lazy, that they weren't brave enough to stand up for you. It's okay. It's okay for one part of you to be angry and for another part of you to understand, but when the understanding part of you takes the angry part of you and throws it out the window or hides it in the closet, that's when you have justification and that's when you have denial. And that's when you begin to lose your self-respect. A lot of people get angry at themselves for getting angry. They say, oh yeah, I'm angry, but I'm angry at myself for getting angry. It's the same thing. How could you be angry at yourself? Yourself is a person. Yourself is somebody who you love. Yourself is you. The reason that many people refuse to look at their minds before they completely fall apart is because they want to protect their illusions. It's the same illusion every time. The illusion that they were loved by people who were really too self-concerned and emotionally distraught to really love anybody, especially themselves, especially their children. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay you were in effect without parents. It's okay your parents were too busy, too lazy. It's okay. Hey, I'm not here to blame the parents. They weren't as lucky as we are. They didn't even dare question the states of their own minds, because if they did, they too would have had to face the reality that they weren't loved. They didn't have WBAI. They didn't have the positive mind. They didn't have the learning that you learn. So the very presence of justifying tells me that a person is reluctant to re-examine their childhood pain. So if you show me someone who is justifying themselves all the time as they talk, as they say, you know, I have this problem, I can't keep a job, but that's because of. Whenever you hear that justification, you could look to early childhood pain. You know, this is Armando Miller. Before we go much further, I want to tell you that I believe that a great deal of psychotherapy is not very effective. I think a lot of it works to give you what you want and need, and a lot of it doesn't work, but some of it does. There are many people who take a firm stance that they don't believe in psychotherapy. I understand. It is those very people, though, who are saying, I don't want to look at my own mind. And it is most often the people who say they don't believe in psychotherapy who are saying something very simple. I don't want to get angry at my parents. I don't want to recognize my anger at my parents. That's what they're saying to me. I don't believe in psychotherapy can be translated into I'm angry at my parents, but I don't want to admit it. Because that's what psychotherapy looks like. It looks like we have to examine what happened to you way back when you started to change yourself. And there's going to be somebody who's going to be there who wasn't right. Somebody did something wrong. That's why you're the mess that you are. But okay, we'll face that. We'll deal with that. It doesn't mean you have to go beat them up now. You don't have to get them to pay your therapy bills. it's okay, we can look at it, but people are reluctant to look at it, so what they do is they discredit the entire profession. There are people who are actually have said they believe that all psychotherapy is evil and bad, all looking at yourself in any form. I understand. They want to protect their illusions about their own parents. Or at least that's my perception. I believe that anyone who's adamant about their refusal to seek psychological help, when they are obviously so in need, these people are the ones who need most to protect themselves from facing the ugly reality of their own childhood. We have an expression for people when they're really bent out of shape. And we call it ABM. ABM are the initials. It means all but medication. You know, it's like that person has got everything but they need. They need some kind of medication to calm them down. The reason that people hold on to the childhood status, there is some advantage for people to maintain a childlike perception of the world, an innocence of the world. And you could see it very often with people. Sometimes they sound like they're young children. They sound like they're young boys or young girls instead of adult men and women. Now, why? Because youth, in early youth, you can justify things better. You can make up more fantasy. You could believe the lies better. You could somehow tell yourself different stories and live by those stories. How many of you are married to people who refuse to see a marriage or couples counselor, even though your family is falling apart? Even though you barely talk to each other every day? I saw a couple young earlier today that they virtually hate each other. It's amazing how much they dislike each other. They have a relationship. They are a husband and wife, and they have four children. But the hatred was so evident, the way they spoke. And what was so apparent was that they were missing any form of friendship. It was just gone. In fact, I could even say they love each other with all the hatred they have, but there was no friendship, and they certainly didn't trust each other. Now, how do you feel about your dignity when you're in a marriage that you hate? How do you feel day to day as you walk down the street? When you figure, as soon as I go home, I'm going to be with someone I don't like. How have you chosen that in your life? It's hard to face. It's much easier to tell yourself, this is the way it is. This is the way I'm going to settle for it. It can't be fixed. It can't be fixed. You know, anything can be fixed. Anything, if you deal with it, can be fixed. Sometimes you just got to face the reality and look at it. But I tell you, friends, putting it off, it's like an illness. You know, it's like having a physical illness. I have a physical illness. I'm not paying attention to it. Oh, what's that thing growing on my arm? Okay, it's just this red patch. Leave it alone. It'll go away by itself. Don't touch it, you know, or some other illness. People like to do that. Okay, sometimes it works just like that. Sometimes things that you would worry about do go away. But then there are other times that it needs attention. Your relationships need attention. Your day-to-day existence needs attention. The job that you work at, the place that you live, the people that you hang out with, it needs attention. It has to be filled with integrity and beauty. Somehow, you just got to get it in there, or it's not worth it. It's really not worth it. You could say you're doing it for the kids, but it's not worth it for the kids either. Because the kids who are being fed by your living a toxic life are not going to grow up very healthy. Some people attempt to address their issues by going to chemistry. They go to chemistry, they'll take one drug or another, they'll take oxycodone, they'll take painkillers, they'll take marijuana, alcohol, any number of things. They'll give you analogs of amphetamines that'll hold your serotonin, stop you from traveling the full range of emotions. Now they have SSRIs, so we give you Prozac. Prozac and its offspring Zoloft. 30 billion Prozac prescribed to date. 30 billion Prozac. That's a lot of Prozac, don't you think? Imagine if that amount of Prozac entered human bodies, right? They're all given to human bodies, 30 billion of them since its existence, and somehow some aspect of it gets flushed down the toilet, right? Because you have to ingest it and it has to pass through your body. So some element of the Prozac has to go into our water. So now you have depressed, you have happy fish, right? Because now they're all taking Prozac. And somehow it gets fed back because it affects serotonin and it affects the hormones and it gets fed back to us in our water. 70% of all of the Prozac and its offshoots, I'm going to do all the other SSRIs, are prescribed by non-physicians. These are non-psychiatrists. These are non-psychiatrists who are telling people to take antidepressants. So your physician will tell you, you know, you'll have somebody else telling you to take it and try it out. So here's what we're saying. You wind up with taking a drug, and the drug helps you limit your emotional response. So now, when you're at home, you don't have to worry about dignity. You don't have to worry about self-respect. You could just be a little numb. And when you go numb on some level, taking an SSRI or taking medications, you go numb on a lot of different levels. And one of the interesting places that shrivel up is your libido. You can actually feel the loss of libido, but it's okay. You can feel yourself not sexually stimulated anymore, and that's fine. You know, now you don't even feel bad about it. And life continues that way. And I know this sounds terrible, but the opposite of it is so easy. You know, somebody once pointed to me sprouts. Sprouts. Sunflower sprouts. I like sprouts. You know what's beautiful about sprouts is they are so beautifully the essence of good food. They are like a perfect food. A sprout takes is the object of photosynthesis. It takes in the sun and it feeds it into a seed and it comes out in this brilliant, brilliant form called a sunflower sprout. When you eat a sprout, you're eating the sun's energy directly. People juice them and it's really a fabulous, fabulous food. That is, we can all sprout. We all have this ability. We all have a piece inside of us that is ready to grow. If we'll just clear the path to let the sun shine in. That's where the light gets in. There's a crack. What's that expression? There's a crack in the ceiling. That's where the sun gets in. Drugs. Drugs. We think that drugs are such a radical discovery recently. We always knew that drugs ease the pain. That's what the 60s and 70s were all about. With the birth control pill and Watergate and Nixon and Vietnam came the awareness that things weren't as rosy as we believed, that the values we were taught by our parents were questionable. So what we did to deal with the pain, we did drugs. Yes, mushrooms, LSD, marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy, ketamine, crack, amphetamines, barbiturates, all of that came along the Prozacs of the 60s. No big news. And of course, we did have WBAI to help ease the pain, didn't we? This is Armand DeMille talking about the need to deny our own inner reality and the many ways we do it, with particular focus on the phenomena of justification, making excuses. Why do you think we're so afraid to face reality? Well, one reason is that when we see the truth, we think we have to do something about it. So one of the ways that we try not to face reality, and one of the other ways out of it, is to get depressed. Let's talk about depression. Depression. To depress. That's what the word tells you everything about it. Depress. Depress. To push down. To quell. Right? Depress. Depress the button. To depress what, we ask? To depress when you're depressed. What are you depressing? You depress truth. You depress reality. That's all depression is, fear of truth. So what does a therapist do, a real therapist, an effective therapist, to get to see you the truth, to feel the truth, to undepress your awareness, your knowledge, your adulthood, your wisdom? What do you do as a therapist? How do you help a person get undepressed? You could point them to their real issue and you could say, let's look at this thing that you're afraid to look at. And they undepress for long enough to look at it with you. And while they look at it with you, it gives a little bit of steam in between so the person can be less depressed. But depression is the average way, the way that most people cover up their feelings. They walk around depressed. So the bottom line here is to link back to the issue of self-respect and dignity. It's that the avoidant mind, the mind that avoids itself, cannot yield a person who is self-respecting because there is no self to respect. If you're running through life afraid of yourself, you can't find this feeling of admiration for yourself. So we have to. The only way we're going to get through it for ourselves and for our children is to face whatever these issues are that we're afraid to face. To look in the mirror sometime in the morning and wake up and say to yourself, whoever you are, I'm the only one who's really going to love you, and I'm your friend. So the only way through this, my friends, is to restore that part of you that has dignity, you know, to find it. And the only dignified way of being is to say to yourself, I've got to live with my own respect of myself. You could do it now, or you'll do it later, one way or another. You have to find it, or you're depressed forever. And I think most people eventually do find it. Sometimes it just takes a long time. It takes age. But other times you could just take an active part of it, like learning as much as you could learn about yourself, not just about other people. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we be back, we'll continue.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
Magic is not easy. No, magic is not easy. Not presto, change-o, hocus-pocus, snap your fingers and all is changed. Nothing changes. Nothing. Magic is not easy. Nothing moves unless the heart is in it, unless the will is in it. Listen. Listen, my friends. Everything is connected. Everything. Ignore that it will not compute. Everything is connected. So if you would do magic, listen. Start here. Nothing moves unless the heart is in it, unless the will is in it. Magic is not easy. Simple words won't do it. If you would speak magic, listen. Magic is fed by the heart, made manifest by the will. When the demons inside, the one whose true names are self-doubt and self-hate, have grown sufficiently strong, when we will not, cannot touch our own demons, then we invent others. Or worse, we sing the name of demons invented for us, and we depend on them for magic. No, magic is not easy. If you would live magic, listen. You must move beyond your pain. You must turn and face your fear. You must touch those demons, hold them. Ignore your scorching flesh because it's an illusion. Cradle the flailing thing. Cradle your own demon self until you can love it into healing. Only then can you do magic. Magic is not easy. This is The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We want to continue on with this exploration of a sense that people have of dignity. And I've asked one of the most dignified people I know, especially at our radio station, an associate of mine, Dr. Majid Ali, who we've had quite a long relationship at this point. I wanted to ask him, since he knows, the one thing that Majid does is he focuses on people maintaining their sense of self. And it's really fine to be able to have him on with me here on WBAI. Majid, welcome to The Positive Mind. Nice to have you here in the studio.
The positive mind is precious, Armand. It really is precious. So thank you so much. You know, I was thinking of our earlier meetings when I just came to WBI. And, of course, you have a whole world listening to you. And the brief encounters that we had originally at WBI, and later on we met here at your office a couple of times.
And we had dinner once.
Yes. I've been so impressed by your insights. I've been so impressed by your authenticity. I think it is the authenticity, really, which I see, looking at your work, as the most precious quality, and that's what makes the positive mind so precious. Now I forgot what the question you asked.
Okay, now the question is about how you help people maintain their sense of dignity through your work. What do you see? What do you see that gets in the way? You know, I know we were talking to a man who talks about male menopause, and he talks about all the changes that men go through. What gets in the way? How do you restore dignity through medicine?
I think, Armand, everything is stacked up against individuals recognizing and then preserving their dignity. The system, the information. You know, lately I've been writing a lot about how can you talk about authenticity in healing if your vocabulary is limited to diseases, drugs, and devices? So those people who profit from disease literacy, they don't want people to be healing literate. Those who profit from drug literacy and device literacy, they do not want people to be healing literate. Now, you can't really recognize your dignity and preserve your dignity if you're not comfortable with the vocabulary of dignity. So there are domains of life, there are domains of experiences, where our insights, our perceptions are based on them. And it is as if the dignity has been hijacked.
Well, let me go back to that for a second now. So now you're making quite a statement that if a person loses their dignity and they go to a healer, the healer, according to whether he's practicing one or another art, how can he, if he's selling machines or drugs or procedures, how can he, the physician, have the dignity to approach a patient to help them reserve theirs or bring back theirs? So you're saying right off the bat, the practice of medicine in its specialization and its falling into these fields is in effect robbing people of their dignity.
Sadly so, Armand, we have close to now over 30 physicians in my extended family. They are young people, very few of my age. So, and they read what I write. They're familiar with my background. And when they meet with me, there is never any question about the authenticity of the work. You know, I got editorialized by JAMA. I got lead article published back, I think it was 1982, and JAMA editorialized this, and that's a distinction. Then Lancet did the same thing 2 years later. So I've been very fortunate that I had those kinds of credentials, that when these young doctors in our family, they are familiar with this. When usually we don't talk about it, these things, but when we do, and so I would ask them, how do you come up with this fundamental conflict? We really can't talk about dignity of people unless they are informed. You know, dignity is rooted in self-reflection. Dignity is rooted in self-knowledge. So now I'm very sympathetic to them. They do not bat an eye in admitting that they do not make their decisions. They do not make clinical decisions. They just have to follow the standards set by, and you know who. If it is American Diabetic Association, they will control the professors of diabetology. American Diabetic Association is controlled by people who ever profit from it. So, for example, the New York Times, CNN, public television, WNYC. When was the last time you heard an hour program on the scientific basis of literacy? When was the last time you heard or read a program where somebody goes, fundamentally drug medicine, as valid as it is for saving lives, is fundamentally unscientific? And when I talk to them, and they provoke me, sometimes, you know, at family, I know they're trying to provoke me. I say, okay, I'm an old man, have fun with me. So, but then sooner or later, they would talk about this. Oh, you know, but we have to have double-blind crossover. I said, don't talk nonsense to me. I can talk to them because they're my nephews and son and, you know, daughter-in-law. So at home, you know, you don't stand on ceremonies. I say, don't talk nonsense to me. When you give beta blockers, for example, for slowing the heart rate, that's wonderful. Because heart palpitations can be a problem. They can lead to cardiac rhythm problems and people get into deep mess. I honor you. But don't tell me that is scientific, because science would be to figure out why do you have to block their beta receptors. Similarly, if you try to, let's say, metformin or diabetes drugs, you are performing a valuable service for the person. But don't call it scientific, because you don't even touch the issues of what caused diabetes in the first place. Now let's talk about diabetes and dignity. You know, the...
Boy, you're talking, you know, thank you. Thank you for going there. Because I don't know if there are very many people who have addressed this subject. Diabetes and dignity, you know, those are... It should be a whole essay in itself.
I will write it.
Yeah.
Maybe we should collaborate. We should write it together.
Well, what is it? I mean, let's talk about just the loss of dignity.
I give you
from
two
diabetes.
Examples.
Sure.
Diabetes is one of the top causes of erectile dysfunction, loss of male sexuality, low testosterone. Diabetes builds up grease on the cell membrane. So all the receptors for testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, you know, recently, the New York Times, there was a study, I don't know which journal it came out, New York Times wrote an article. We've recognized for a while that the evolutionary model cannot just assign testosterone functions to men, nor estrogen functions to women. So for evolutionary reason, one would have said that whatever causes problem with testosterone has to also affect the estrogen balance for men, I'm talking about.
Right.
Now, here the specific study says that the mid-region weight gain, obesity, which correlates most with heart disease, strokes, and diabetes, well, now there is an issue that more than testosterone, estrogen deficiency leads to buildup of fat in mid-region of men. Now, when we talk about dignity and diabetes, diabetes is the number one cause of erectile dysfunction. But let's look at the issue of young girls. Let's talk about diabetes and dignity for teenagers. Armand, your practice and I, my work, your work, we usually pick up the patterns of new epidemics or pandemics 10, 20, 30 years before everybody else recognizes, right. before the New York Times catches up with it or the other people. We pick it up because we are used to seeing people whose dignity was robbed by all kinds of therapies and all kinds of, you know.
Well, can you be real specific with the diabetes?
Yes.
The symptoms of diabetes that are so, well, first, what are the symptoms of diabetes that make it so hard for you to maintain your dignity?
Well, I think the diabetes.
I mean, for example, when you have diabetes, you urinate a lot. And
yes.
it's very hard to be tied to a bathroom.
That's right.
And how do you feel? I visited a woman who had diabetes, and I kept asking them to go out with me. And then the husband said to me, you know, she has to be near a bathroom all the time. And what does that feel like to the integrity of self?
Well, I think that we should, you know, when I went to med school in 1958, frequency of urination used to be, and excessive thirst used to be the primary clinical feature.
Yes.
Since I do insulin testing for all my adult patients, actually what I was going to say is, let's talk about dignity and diabetes and talk about teenagers. I'm beginning to see the beginning of an epidemic of polycystic ovary of young girls. Now, when I was a pathologist, polycystic ovary, you know, we used to see 8 or 10 cases in a year in a major hospital, 11 gynecologists. Now I'm beginning to see literally every month, it could be a 17-year-old girl. For some reason, Muslim girls are more vulnerable.
More vulnerable.
They are more vulnerable to this. But I think that the issues of vitamin D and nutrients are part of the picture which builds the grease on the cells and makes insulin dysfunctional, and they have too much insulin, they have insulin resistance, they gain weight, and then high testosterone, and later on they have failure of ovulation and they develop the so-called
cysts. The question, just for the people who
that's just dignity,
the question is, what's the sense you have of yourself as a teenager? As a teenager, when you're watching hair grow on your breasts and you're watching yourself go through this, you think there's something wrong with you. You may go to your parents and say, what's wrong with me? And they'll say, oh, you'll grow out of it. You're just getting your period, that's all, and so forth. You're saying, this is a society that we have now, which in some way is fostering the consistent loss of dignity, even going back to teenage years. It's not just about adulthood. You know, I'm sure it's happening to men, too. I'm sure men, young boys, are having their own losses. You know, if it's not just sexual, there are other things that are manifesting in their bodies that are looking a certain way. When a person has this, you know, I mean, do you think, Majid, because if we had the entire day, it would be wonderful to keep talking, but if we have just a limited time, do you think, I'm sure you do, the cleansing of the body is the first step in being able to restore a person's sense of self-worth, of dignity? Is it the cleansing, isn't it? You have to get rid of it.
Absolutely, yes. I think that, you know, the sad part, in this New York City, which claims to have the world's most eminent endocrinologist, this is a sad comment. I have yet to see a young woman, teenager, with menstrual irregularity, all the features that I've just described, who brought to me a 3-hour insulin profile. Because without doing that, you can never get to the problem. Once you have a clear biochemical definition of the problem, the testosterone level, rising testosterone level, occurs as a consequence of excess insulin. Now, when we talk about how can you really talk about the dignity of these teenagers and what's happening to their parents. And, you know, these are the times when young girls are more sensitive, more aware of how they look at people around them and how they are looked at by people around them. So why would these young girls not have problems of anxiety and heart palpitation? They go to cardiologist. They have cardiac workup done. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that. Then they go to endocrinologist, and you know what they get? They get metformin. Metformin, of course, is a diabetes drug. It's actually a good drug when you have to use in the early stages of diabetes before you can reverse diabetes. So in reality now, you have turned a teenager into a sick mind because you've told them, here is a disease, here is a diagnosis, here is a drug, metformin. Now, in all this process, what robs their dignity is, you know, people are very intuitive. This, you know it much better than I do. People are very intuitive and they get a sense of something wrong long before others do. When a teenager goes to an endocrinologist, first a pediatrician, then an endocrinologist, then they throw in the cardiology work, a pediatric cardiologist, sometimes because of the stress, they have heartburn. So there comes the gastroenterologist and endoscopy. I believe that one of the things which robs their dignity is not being aware of what's the problem.
Sure. The lack of awareness of it. The lack of awareness is it at the beginning. So if we're going back to the idea of a cleansing, which is eventually for everyone, you're convinced that what we've got to do is kind of rebuild a system and not just keep adding a non-scientific drug to a drug. Wasn't metformin taken off the market, put back on the market, and taken off the market a number of times? I remember, for a while it was illegal.
Metformin, the reason it was it got into such disrepute, because in a very small number of people, metformin causes the so-called lactic acid crisis. And actually there were some deaths earlier on.
Right.
But when you look at the total context, I said metformin is actually a good drug for most people when it is essential. And when you initially diagnose diabetes, it is necessary for several months to do that. The newer drugs, for example, Victoza type of drugs, Genumet type of drugs, you know what they do is clearly they injure the pancreas. Now, if the so-called diabetes type 2, the main type, I subclassify. I have an article coming, I hope, next month, where I am subtyping diabetes type 2. And I'm giving my reasons why I think they should be subtyped. Subtype A would be diabetes type 2 with insulin toxicity, what they call insulin resistance or hyperinsulinemia. Mm-hmm. Diabetes 2 subtype B is when they have depleted their insulin. Now, the reversal of diabetes diabetes type 2A with insulin toxicity is the easiest thing in the world except for one. And that one thing is getting it back. Mm-hmm. We are human, okay? So I think that, you've raised a very important issue about the issue of human dignity. And we just fell into a discussion of diabetes. But I believe that all through this, let's talk about, for example, irritable bowel syndrome, spastic colon. And then this will go on to, in many cases, ulcerative colitis.
Okay, but before even before we get specific about any further conditions, you're saying something I think very important. We're saying that there is, that people perceive themselves as broken. And when a person perceives themselves as broken or there's something wrong, they can't hold their heads up. And they kind of walk away. And you can see it with elder people, you know, they kind of give up.
Absolutely true.
And it's you need an inspiration somewhere. Now, you get it with me, you get the positive energy with you. A person comes to you and they see you and you say, okay, let's clean this. Let's work with this. First thing we got to do is clean out the system. There was a very interesting, someone brought me a concept about being on fasting, and they said they were fasting, and they were just doing a pure fast, pure water fast, because they wanted to cleanse their bodies. And they said they could feel little by little every one of those cells, or maybe it's just the DNA of everything that they put in their body would be leaving a little at a time. So you could be, if you were eating a pickle, it could be the cucumber plus the vinegar plus everything else. A little at a time, it leaves your body. And after 4 days, you get to a point where you feel like you are yourself. And I thought about the 4-day fast, you know, where people feel this powerful feeling. Now, using your system, they would do a more proactive cleansing. right? They would do.
Actually, I prefer gentle daily detox.
Yeah.
But I believe that there is a value to these time-tested detoxes. See, Armand, what you're saying, every sentence that you speak, you know, provokes so many thoughts in my mind. People like you, and I think I'm walking in your footsteps, our life experiences in many ways have been very kind to us. So our early successes, so to speak, quote unquote, gave us a certain measure of self-assurance. So if somebody negates what we are doing, we can take it. Okay, we can take it without being squashed down. Just think about what you just said. Empirically, experientially, people find out the certain values of detoxes, certain values of positive mind, certain values of cultural, indigenous ways of healing. You go to a doctor and the first thing, it's unscientific. And that doctor doesn't even know that his entire work is unscientific. If you accept my definition, that science is observation of natural phenomenon. So somebody who has, let's say, polycystic ovarian diabetes, practice of science would be to look at those natural phenomenon which led to the state called diabetes or polycystic ovary. Now, when a person takes this initiative, they do some research, they test certain things out, and then they go to their doctor, and the first thing that the doctor does is trash it. Now, I know this because I was on that side once. One time I was on the radio, I think it was about 35 years ago or so, somebody from the West Coast, and he asked me about something, and I said, no, that's illogical, that won't work. And then I said, hold it, I want to take my words back. I do not have any experience with it. I do not have a right to say whether it will say logical or logical. The point is, empiricism, you know, somebody said that science is the conquered territory of the poet. Okay? The poet and the philosopher, they imagine, and the scientist, by his arduous digital diligent work, maps out the domains of so-called established knowledge, and then that becomes science. And then we move on to the next frontier. When you talk about dignity, you know, we can talk about that in so many different levels, but there is a certain indignity in being rejected. When you share information about your insights, your positive things which have happened, and somebody trashes it, that's indignity. Don't you think?
Well, it could. It could.
Unless you have a strength within.
Unless you've gotten to a point in life, you know, where you say, all right.
Right.
It's all right. You could trash it like your nephews do with you.
Right.
Right? Well, you know, it's very, we're going to have to continue. You know, this is fascinating. We're going to have to take leave this for now. My guest is Dr. Majid Ali, who is a dear friend and is currently on WBAI at 11:30 on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, right, along with my
11 program.
11 p.m. And my program's on at 1 p.m. on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. They kept us together. Right. We're at where the bookends.
Right.
Bookends of the world. And you could go to, Majid, what's your website?
You know, the best one is aliacademy.org.
Aliacademy.org.
www.aliacademy.org.
Where you can pick up thousands of wonderful essays in many different forms. A great source of information. We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to wbai.org, or you can go to thepositivemind.com, where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reactions. Be back with you soon, my friends. Thank you.
Ain't you glad we were mated for each other? Ain't you glad that we waited for each other? We agree constantly. Life is just a sympathy, a perfect harmony. Ain't you glad how we get along together? Ain't you glad we can laugh at stormy weather? Folks declare what a pair, they can see we're happy. Ain't you glad? Just like your lovers on picture covers, in spite of sun or rain, we'll find romance. Every scene we meet is lover's lane. Ain't you glad that our kisses keep their flavor? Ain't you glad everything is in our favor every day?